This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Hey, welcome, buddy. My apologies. I had put out that this would be tomorrow, my date, which would be Wednesday. And unfortunately, we don't live on a flat earth. We do have things called time zones. And I messed up because Dr. Opie lives in Australia and he's a full day in the future. And so it is tomorrow for him. It is Wednesday. It is only Tuesday for me. So we have to reschedule this and doing it tonight. So hopefully people that were thinking that it was tomorrow can come join us tonight. But with us, me tonight, I have Dr. Graham Opie. He is a very prevalent contemporary philosopher. I believe you're still a professor of philosophy with Monash,
Oxford. Yeah, that's right. Still at Monash, yes.
And he has graciously came on to donate about an hour of his time to talk about his book, Atheism and Agnosticism, part of the Principles of Religion series. And one of my arguments that I've had corresponding with Dr. Malik, who wrote a paper on defining atheism and the burden of the proof. And we're just kind of going to jump into it. I am going to give out the link to a few people that want to join. If they have questions, I will be watching the live chat. Primarily, I'm hoping that I can get some feedback on my own particular argument in regards to this. But I also have joining us tonight, Jim Majors, the CEO of Atheist Republic. Hi, Jim.
Hi, everyone.
And Milwaukee Atheist. Oh, always a pleasure, my friend. And Lawrence from Milwaukee Atheist. Welcome to
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me back.
So let's jump right into it. Dr. Opie, thank you again so much for donating your time for this. You don't know how, like, I'm actually like a little flustered because I'm always flattered when I have somebody of your prestige and somebody that you're, someone who's this erudite to come in and actually talk to us. See, I have a fake background because I can't actually read this many books. Well, look at his. That's what somebody who's educated actually has in their background. But anyways, welcome to my channel.
I have five.
Well, it could be worse. If the camera was pointing the other way, there's a big stack of books over there that you can't see because this is my
there you way. Go. There you go. Luckily, this is my bedroom. This isn't my office. So,
well, let's just jump into it. So first, do you want to tell people about your book there? By the way, I don't know if it's still available PDF, but you had it available for PDF. I have it for HTML and I have it download. But you want to like briefly tell people about that particular book that I referred to?
Okay, so Cambridge has a new series called Elements, and this was the first book in their philosophy of religion Elements series. And so back in May, when it came out, they decided to make it freely available till the end of the year. So you can get the PDF still. I believe that will end at the end of December. They've since released a bunch of other books like this, and they've also they're also free. Sorry, what's happened? Everything seems to have frozen.
We can still see you.
Yeah, it's okay. Okay, I can see. I'm just wondering what's happening in front of me on the screen. It's
been... Okay, yeah, I heard a little spike in the audio, but that was about it.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I did too. Actually, the audio got really clear and crisp and louder, like about 10 dB gain for some strange reason, but now it's normalized. Yeah. So.
Okay, so the book is meant to be a very brief introduction to atheism and agnosticism. It starts off by saying how I use the words atheism and agnosticism. And then it says, then there's a little bit about how we should assess atheism and agnosticism. And then in the last two chapters of the book, I sketch arguments for atheism and agnosticism. I guess that's what's in it. The whole thing's about 20,000 words.
Yeah, that's pretty much in a nutshell. I mean, I actually have it in front of me. And one of the things I do quote often is when I don't want to get into definitional things because people have this weird conception that I make things definitional arguments. I don't. I personally use specific definitions, usually essential stricto definition, only because I find that that is what more defines my position, right? What other people use, that's their prerogative. I have never once, contrary to what Matt Dillahunty or anybody else has ever said or thinks, I have never once told an atheist, if you don't subscribe to philosophical terminology, you're not a true atheist. I've never, ever advocated that in the 5 years I've been on YouTube. That's ridiculous. If somebody holds to a position that they just do not have a belief in God and they want to call that atheism in a sensu lato type approach, it is what it is. I mean, that's a definition. It's a colloquial definition. I have arguments why I think one definition is better than another, but I don't say that they're not atheists. But my position, Dr. Opie, is that, as you say, atheists believe that there are no gods, and agnostics suspend judgment on the claim that there are no gods. And that's how I particularly use these definitions for myself. I don't consider myself an atheist because I don't have the belief that there are no gods. I take the position, I do suspend judgment on the proposition. I don't say the proposition is true. I don't say it's false. That is agnostic as defined in Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, IEP, Cambridge, and numerous other sources. So first, my question to you is, am I using these terms inappropriately, or is there something wrong with my approach by saying that I personally use these terminologies the way you have in your book? Is there anything wrong with that?
So in the book, just before I get to saying what I mean by the words atheism and agnosticism and atheist and agnostic, I point out that it's a stipulation. It's a way of making things precise for a certain purpose. That is, so that what I've got to say in the book will be clear. Different people use the words differently. The word atheism has a very interesting history, and it meant something quite different when it was introduced into the language in the middle of the 16th century than what it does now. But there's no, philosophers do this all the time, take a word that gets used differently by different people in different contexts and give it a precise meaning for their purposes at hand. So no, there's nothing wrong with what you do. You're just following standard practice.
And when you say standard practice, my argument has always been this, is that when you're reading a paper, when you're reading a philosophical paper, I think there's a way that most people come with the approach that these words are going to be used in a specific way on average, right? Obviously there's Flew's Presumption of Atheism. There's Smith, who wrote A Case Against God, and Steve Bullivant, who he doesn't necessarily agree either, from the Oxford Handbook of Atheism, which is collection of opinion pieces. But overall, if you want to read a paper in context, I have found, according to even Cambridge, that it is standard that you ought to use the terminology I use in order to understand the papers better. Would that be fair?
So it's interesting. And if you go back and you read Bertrand Russell, there were times when he said that he was not an atheist. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, he was using the word atheist not in the way that we're using it. He was thinking that in order to be an atheist, you more or less had to be certain that there are no gods. And so when he claimed to be, as he sometimes did, an agnostic, he wasn't claiming to be an agnostic in the sense that you claim to be an agnostic, because he was nearly certain that there are no gods. And that would count as atheism, I think, on your view, but not on his. So there's a long history of these words being used differently by different people. And I don't think that there's any, like if you go back and you read in the literature, you can't make assumptions about what even quite famous people meant by the word atheist. You have to look at where they explicitly say what they mean, or you have to read a whole lot of context in order to figure out how they're using the word.
Yeah, I would say more in modern papers and in on average, right? Because you're right. When Bertrand Wright wrote, his thing on "Am I an atheist or agnostic?" and things of that nature, and Richard Dawkins, Dawkins also has it. He puts certitude for some reason in his Dawkins scale, which I particularly I don't understand that, because I subscribe to a weak belief condition such that knowledge does entail belief, but it doesn't entail certainty.
He also put probability in his thing, and that really threw me off, because I'm like, I can't assert a probability for that. I can't.
I think you can make a probabilistic argument. I know Dr. Malpass does. He relates things to probability. That I kind of don't have it. I personally don't, because I think it's hard to quantify that. But
okay, yeah, I just don't have to never
be an atheist, right? That is something
sure.
That I, if somebody wants to stipulate that as a condition, there, that's fine. But I don't stipulate that, right? But my thing, Dr. Opie, is that because I don't have that belief, and in generally speaking, in philosophy, atheism is more construed to be the belief that there is no God. Am I consistent by claiming that I am agnostic because I am suspending judgment on the particular proposition of theism?
So I would have thought, I mean, the use of the word agnostic is also contested. So when Huxley introduced it, he tied it to a claim about knowledge, right? That he didn't know whether or not there was a God and nobody else could know either, or something like that. Whereas I think that the contemporary usage is the one that you've got. If you've suspended judgment about whether there are gods, then that makes you an agnostic.
Yeah, and Robert Flint in 1903 wrote a bit about this too, and even he claims that when Huxley coined the term, that it wasn't so much the case where it was about knowledge, it was actually that the illusion of knowledge, that the quote Gnostics of his time, he felt weren't justified to take either position, either theism or atheism. So he wanted to come up with a new term that didn't describe either. This is why when people say that you have to be atheist or theist, they're using a schema that I don't use. They're using a colloquial schema that you find mostly on YouTube and atheist groups. But in academics, I don't see that schema. I think they rejected Flew's argument for the presumption of atheism back in, I think it was 72. And I don't think it's a good way to define things. But people wish to, they're perfectly fine to do so. But when they say that it is by necessity that you must be either atheist or a theist, then I take umbrage, because it is not by necessity, because there are formal definitions that allow for the quote middle ground or something between the belief that gods exist and the belief that gods do not exist, right? And that's what I would place agnosticism, or the psychological state of being agnostic, on the proposition, as Stanford would actually relate that.
Right. So one of the problems here is that I think that there's a symmetry between atheism and theism. So the theist says there's at least one God and says it's not the case that there are no gods, and that atheist says there are no gods and denies, says it's not the case that there's at least one God. And then if you think about the attitudes that you can take towards those two propositions, right, other ones, right, so the atheist accepts one, rejects the other, theist accepts the other and rejects the one. There's all this middle ground of people who are undecided or have never thought about it or and so on, that have to be categorized somehow, right? So, but not only that, if you're going to say that an atheist is anyone who doesn't accept that there are gods, and a theist is anyone who doesn't accept that there are no gods, then you're going to end up with agnostics will turn out to include people who are inclined to think that there are gods and people who are inclined to think maybe that there aren't. Maybe it depends a little bit. So this is some part of the vagueness about agnosticism, exactly where the line at each end between agnosticism and theism, agnosticism and atheism is going to be drawn.
That's just that's just when we add in a libertarian party,
the third option. Well, you know, there's something to be said for that. Look at again, people have this weird understanding, and they do get it from the root word of gnosis. And I think that is an etymological fallacy. And it's very clear when even Huxley coined the term, and even when Robert Flint was talking about this term. When we're talking about a proposition, right, we're saying the theism is the proposition that at least one God exists. If you abstain from assigning a truth value to it, if I say I don't believe it's true, I don't believe it's false, I am not saying that it is true, and I'm not saying it is false, it has nothing to do with knowledge at that point. That is basically a suspending of judgment on the proposition. So, Dr. Obi, when people say this adage that agnosticism deals with knowledge. Do you think they're making a fundamental mistake when they're misapplying it to the proposition that we're talking about to be agnostic on? Because in that case, agnostic is nothing to do with knowledge. It is just, I don't believe P and I don't believe not P. Would that be true?
Right. So I think that that's a standard usage for the term agnostic across the board. So pick any proposition and think proposition and its negation and think about the possible attitudes here. One thing that you can do is suspend judgment about it, whatever it is, and then the natural way to describe your state is to say, so I'm agnostic about that one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't made up my mind. In or outside philosophy, it is polysemous. Yeah. Again, SEP makes that very argument that you could be agnostic for any proposition. I'm agnostic on aliens, perhaps, right? I'm agnostic on anything that gives you to evaluate that you don't say it's true or false, you could be agnostic on that proposition. But in this particular case, when I say I'm agnostic, I'm referring to the proposition of theism because that's the topic that we're referring to.
But are you literally saying that you have no knowledge of UFOs or no knowledge of aliens?
But see, what I take umbrage is that by changing the propositional attitude to knowledge, it's a completely different thing, right? Because the question isn't, do you know if gods exist? Unless you're talking to Dawkins or, who was it you brought up before that was mentioning, that some people think it's relating to a certainty, right? But it's not about knowledge, and knowledge doesn't even require certainty. So I think that when people change that propositional attitude, you no longer answering the same question. If somebody says, do you believe that there are gods? Then I'm staying within that same propositional attitude of belief. I do not believe P is true, and I do not believe P is false. Right? I don't want to change it to knowledge because knowledge is a completely different propositional attitude. That is a subset of it.
Right.
Right.
Right. So how do you defend the argument when people say, well, when I say agnostic, I just mean that I don't have a knowledge claim, but I am also an atheist, and I don't have a belief claim.
Okay, well, you know what? Let me kind of run this by Dr. Opik, because this is one thing that I know Ozymandias, maybe Matt Dillahunty, there's a video with him talking to Anthony Magnabosco on this very topic, that he no longer thinks that agnostic atheism, for example, as you mentioned, something along those lines, is sensical in the weak case. The reason being is because the way I'm looking at it, and I even talked to Matt on this particular topic one time off air. Sorry, I don't have a record of it. But he agreed but said he wouldn't phrase it this way. Now, I phrase it this way, Dr. Opik. I don't think it makes sense to epistemically modify a non-dosastic quote position. If you just say, I do not have a belief in God, it doesn't make sense to me to then say, well, I don't have a knowledge of a non-belief, because you're just saying then I don't know if I don't believe. So I think that saying agnostic atheism in the weak case is nonsensical.
Okay. So I'm not sure I've got this at all, but it does seem certainly the way I use the words, we're talking about exclusive categories here, right? There are atheists, there are theists, there are agnostics, and there are the innocents, the people who have no belief-like attitude. Once we've got those categories, we can ask all kinds of questions about them. We can ask which amongst them claim to know whatever it is that's their position, which is certain, which think they've got proofs, which think that it would be irrational to belong to any of the other categories, and so on. But that's just additional information about those people. It doesn't change the underlying categories, and it doesn't look as though we need to divide up the categories more finely and have new words for certain theists or theists who think they've got proofs or agnostics who are really robust in their agnosticism and would be impossible to shift one way or the other, and so on.
I think there's a really big divide in the atheist community that's not really identified. And I mean, every atheist has a justification and a standard of belief for their position. And I mean, they either reach that inductively or deductively. And I think that's a really big distinction that needs to be made in that community.
Okay, and you could do the same thing with theists as well, I guess, right?
But I don't know. But my whole thing is that atheists suspend their belief on a lack of a verifiable evidence, whereas generally, I mean, pretty much every theist that I speak to, they hinge their position on a presuppositional belief on non-verifiable evidence.
But there's already a term for that, evidential agnosticism, right? So atheism as Dr. Opie puts out in his book and numerous other sources, has to do with the belief that there are no gods. If you say you're suspending judgment on it, right, because of evidential reasons or lack of evidence, that's evidential agnosticism. So I think what happens is a lot of atheists somehow take this stipulative definitions and they run with it and try to apply it ubiquitously out there. And that's what I take umbrage of, because if you want to use certain definitions, I've never said I have a problem with that. I mean, that's, I kind of do, because I think they're imprecise, but you can't, if you want to do that in your communities, that's great. If atheists want to have the approach that atheism is merely not having a God belief in their communities, I'm not going to tell them they're not atheists. But what I get, Dr. Opie, is that they're telling me that I am an atheist. They're saying, well, Steve, by definition, by necessity, you are an atheist because you are an agnostic. Yet in philosophy, no, I'm not. And I'm holding to more formal definitions. But they do that. And it's a little disturbing.
What if I was to ask you, what if I was to say, Steve, how many gods do you believe in?
Zero.
You don't believe in any God. You do not hold a God belief?
Yeah, agnostics do not believe they're a God. If agnostics believe there's a God, they would be a theist, right? Because the dichotomy would be, I believe there are gods, or I do not believe there are gods, in classical logic, which is one of the reasons I think classical logic is a poor way to describe beliefs. I think you should use dosastic or fuzzy or multivariable or multivariant. But real quick, let me get Dr. Opie's opinion on it real quick.
Sure.
When they try to assume agnostics under atheism by saying that you can only be theist or atheist, that there are no other options, that is by necessity, by definition, am I okay to take umbrage for that? Because again, by going to more formal definitions, it is not by necessity. You do not have to be a theist. You do not have to be atheist. There are other positions that are exclusive, and I would even say mutually exclusive than those positions.
So I want to hark back to something I said before, right? If we're thinking of agnosticism as a position that's intermediate between theists and atheists, then it would make just as much sense to subsume them under theists as it does to subsume them under atheists, right? Because they've suspended judgment. They don't have a view one way or the other, right? So you should be
equal. I have that argument, by the way, Dr. Opie. I actually have it written down that you're just as much equal to a theist being agnostic than you are an atheist. I actually have that law. I'm a long argument for that.
Yeah. So I think that's what I would say in response to this question, right? It's actually a kind of mistake to suppose that somehow or other theism, the claim that there are gods, sets the kind of standard for the discussion so that everybody else is defined against that. There are two positions. There are no gods, or there's at least one god, and the two together define the field. And so agnostics should be genuinely intermediate between the two. That's how I think.
And it's between the belief that gods exist and the belief that there isn't. Now, I'm willing, obviously, to concede the point that either you believe that gods exist or you do not. Again, if you're holding to the principle by balance, sure. But what I find is that in the atheist communities, they literally are saying, if you are not the person that holds to the I believe gods exist, you are therefore by default an atheist, which again, I don't think there's any default position on that proposition. But I've been trying to explain to people in so many different ways over 5 years that this narrative that you have to be theist or atheist is just wrong. Now, granted, if you hold to their schema that they hold to, then sure, under that schema, but that's, to me, that's as well as saying, well, you're either a chicken or a fish. If you're not a fish, you're a chicken. Therefore, you know, I'm not a fish, therefore I'm a chicken.
That's as bad as the classical theism dichotomy of you're either Christian or you're atheist.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, welcome, Sirs the Skeptic. And I'm welcome, Brian G.
Theists who are convinced of their belief, aren't they really the only ones in this whole scenario who actually claim to know anything?
No, because most theists don't claim it as a knowledge claim. They claim it
not necessarily. When you're dealing with very strict adherence to various monotheisms, then that can hold true. But for instance, there are monotheistic there are within monotheism, there's henotheism, there's monolateralism, which are positions that hold that their God is superior. You even had this in Christianity, but that there is still a pantheon of other gods, and that they could be wrong. A lot of time it's a tentative position. So I know that like predominantly we deal with monotheists, so that holds true most of the time, but there are situations where that does not hold true.
I actually know, if you guys remember Dr. Kenny Rhodes, he is a classical theist in the regards that under his schema, if you do not hold to the Christian God beliefs, he would actually place you under atheist, even if you believe with some other God.
Which is something that the Romans would have also done back in ancient times. That was one of their, before Christianity was actually adopted into their infrastructure, people who didn't believe in the polytheistic gods were also labeled atheists. That's a term that's evolved a lot. If you look at the etymology, going back the last 2,000 years, that term has had various different definitions, and almost always it's an in-group term for the out-group.
I agree with that. And Dr. Opie, a friend of mine in the live chat, which is going crazy, by the way, they're loving this. So thank you very much for this. But my friend Zero, he mentions, he says most people consider non-theism, right? Because you have theism or not theism, we'll call that non-theism. They consider non-theism to be atheism. Now, I take a little umbrage with that term most because in my experience, because I run a community with thousands of people, most of them are atheists, a good chunk of them are atheists. I took a poll, 75% of them used the formal definitions. They are atheists by the fact that they believe that there are no gods. They're fine with that. So in your experience, is it really the case that people think that non-theism is equating to atheism, or is that just something we find more on YouTube?
Okay, so that's historically, I think people, for various reasons, have not been that interested in the distinctions that we're drawing. So if you think about national census, so I'll use the Australian one because I'm familiar with that. There's a kind of list of things that you can claim to be like Christian or Buddhist or Hindu. And then there's one that's sort of other, right? And that's how it was originally. And just there were atheists and agnostics and all kinds of things put in there. Later, the census was changed so that there was a category so you could tick not having a belief in God as a box. That still didn't distinguish the way that I use the terms between the atheists and the agnostics. It didn't distinguish between the people who think that there are no gods and the people who just fail to believe that there are. And there are reasons for being interested in these two different categories, right? So what, I mean, the fight here, I mean, if there are fights about this, it's not so much over a word, I think. It's over the importance of recognizing differences between the two categories, right? So the people who think that there are no gods, there's a whole lot of interesting social scientific research which suggests that they're different in certain kinds of ways from the people who merely lack the belief.
Sure. I mean, and you also have to take into account local gods versus global gods, local atheism versus global atheism. You know, it makes very much sense for a person to be a local atheist, for somebody to be, an atheist about their own societal or cultural deities. But for somebody who hasn't studied another deity, it's a lot. It's both easier and harder for them to say that there is no other God than the local one.
No, I agree. But I think what happens is we lose granularity when we start trying to put all these things together. And I think there is a distinction, obviously, between local and global atheism. And I like the nuances. You guys may know, I mean, I have thousands of videos, and a lot of them deal with myopic nuance type thing, right? I mean, so I spent a lot of time the last 5 years talking about not just semantic stuff, but really in-depth differences between positions. And to slam them all together to say you have to be this or that, I think you just lose precision. And especially when you're saying, well, if you're just not atheist, if you don't believe in God, you're non-theist, equating it to atheism, you subsume theological and cognitivist. You subsume ichthyist, which I have an argument against that. And I actually have
a video against that.
You had a good video on that, by the way. But let me ask Dr. Opie Cook on theological non-cognitivist, why I've got him here. And an hour is going to go by real quick. Theological cognitivism, to me, my argument is simple. if you don't have a belief because you're a theological cognitivist and you think that the proposition of theism is not actually a proposition, do you consider a category error or even maybe possibly a contradiction? Just assume a cognitivist position to a non-cognitivist position to one that is a cognitivist, because atheism has to be a cognitivist position because it's a position on a proposition, right? So is there a problem by them saying, well, if you're a theological cognitivist, you're automatically an atheist, because the theological cognitivist says, I can't be an atheist. I can't be a theist because both those are propositional and it's not even a proposition.
Okay, so there's a long history to this. I mean, a long history of discussion of this kind of question. So in Language, Truth, and Logic, Eyre wanted to argue that the word God was meaningless. You couldn't make propositions that contained the word God. So that if you considered the claim there's at least one God, he said that's just meaningless. So there's no problem. And by that he meant really there's no proposition there to consider.
Yeah, that's more of an atheist. So, but yeah, he's saying the whole proposition is meaningless because yeah, God is he's not cognitive. Okay.
And so he said, I'm not an atheist. I'm not an agnostic. There's no proposition with respect to which these positions can be defined. So that was Eyre's view. Now, it's kind of tricky to defend his position because there's all kinds of things that we say, you know, so-and-so believes in God. The Romans thought there were lots of gods and so on, that just look like they're meaningful sentences, and they wouldn't be if the word God was meaningless, right? So it's a hard line, that non-cognitivist line, or at any rate the way that Eyre develops it, the idea that any sentence that's got the word God in it is meaningless, is very hard to defend.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Yeah. I think atheism and theological cognitivism are very, very I can't imagine being justified to hold those positions, even though I kind of used to subscribe to theological cognitivists when I started. But after I learned more, I'm like, I can't hold to this because it's not justifiable. But the question more is the people that do consider themselves being atheist or especially a theological cognitivist, is there a category error by claiming now that those theological and cognitivists are atheists? Because one's a cognitivist position and the other's not.
So one of the things I guess that's important in this is to go back to the kind of beginning. So the word atheist gets used in lots of different kinds of ways. And there are lots of people who want to use it in ways different from the way that I stipulated in my book. And there may be reasons for that that have to do with kind of social factors that, you know, that it's desirable or to be counted as an atheist in certain social circles or whatever, to be able to call yourself an atheist rather than have to call yourself something else. I mean, one advantage is that kind of broadly most people have some idea about what atheism is. Theological non-cognitivism, not so much. That's just going to make lots of people scratch their heads. So you can see that there are going to be reasons why people would like to be able to use that label. It won't fit with the usage of many people, but in some respects you might think it's fine. We need a label. One of the labels that we need is for that broad collection of people that, from my point of view, would pick up atheists, agnostics, and then theological non-cognitivists.
Yeah, no, I get it for senses or for or more especially for the normalization of atheism. My question is very specific, just relating to the logic itself, just relating to the set. Is there a problem with the set? Even though, yeah, sure, you can bypass that and say, yes, this is obviously a set issue or logical error, but we're going to use some kind of umbrella term for census, you know, other than nons, because nons are a real popular thing. And again, I am pro trying to normalize atheism as far as the term, right? I think that it does need to be normalized because there is still a slight stigma with it. But my question is very specifically more toward, I do believe that it's a category error, straight out using just sets.
So I guess it's only a category error relative to some set of stipulations about what the terms mean, right? So usage wins out. So if in 70 years' time the word atheist is used to pick out that assortment of what I'm going to call atheists, agnostics, non-cognitivists, you know, that range, well, then that just will be what the term means, if that's how everybody uses it, right? There's no kind of magic meanings that attach to terms. That's not how it is at the moment, though. At the moment, there's a lot of people wanting to use the terms in different ways and arguing with one another about kind of sensible ways of using the terms. And that hasn't, you know, it is what it is now, and it'll be whatever it is in 100 years' time.
Sure, I totally agree with that. Yeah, I do believe that usage plays an important role in how we use these words. But again, I'm only going by modern vernacular and when I'm reading stuff. But Jimmy had a question.
I was just curious. So what would you, how would you identify somebody other than the word atheist as somebody as myself who is an explicit atheist on a local level, but an implicit atheist on a global level?
So, okay. So now you'll need to explain to me exactly what you mean, but what you mean is, if we think about, say, the various Christian gods that are believed in by people around you, you say there's no such gods.
Right. Like every God concept that has been presented to me, I don't believe in. But I'm not saying that no gods exist, which some people would call it weak atheism, but I would call it strong atheism on a local level and weak atheism on a global level.
Right. So you think for any God that anyone has ever believed exists, you think that no, there's no God of that kind. But you're leaving it open that there might be some kind of unconsidered or not thought of yet God that exists.
Sure. Because somebody else's concept of a God or my concept of a God could be a technologically advanced race that's so far, you know, past my own understanding that it appears to be supernatural.
I guess in that case, though, you would say they weren't really gods. They were just advanced aliens. Right,
yeah, exactly. They wouldn't really be gods, but to somebody who couldn't conceive the technology, they would most certainly be gods.
I when I hear somebody present that argument that I've only been an atheist to the gods I've heard before, I think to me that they're trying to hedge their bets, because the question isn't, are you atheist atheistic toward the gods you've heard of? The question is there a God? And people remember my flowchart, which some people criticize, I think, fairly, and I think that the only thing that was fairly criticized on my flowchart is I put hard solipsism in a position for on the epistemology only because I had no.
I loved it. Just dead end.
Yeah, it just dead end. Because what the hell is dogmatic nihilism really?
Right, you got nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't know what to put there, so I got to expand on that on part of my thing that you're just a hard solipsist. But my first question was, does God exist? And people criticize, well, that's not a proposition. But the reason why I put does God exist is because that's the great debate question.
It is a proposition, because as soon as you ask somebody on a personal level, on a local level, they immediately identify that nomenclature with the concept.
Proposition is either true or false, right? It's a question. Does God exist, right? A proposition is God exists. That would be true or false. But so the question is, does God exist? And that's the reason why I like the nomenclature that I use in Dr. Opie's book, is that question now becomes yes, then you're a theist. No, you're an atheist. And then if you say, I don't know, you can put that under agnostic, I don't care, an apatheist. What does God mean? It has no meaning. Ichtheist, which again, I have issues with. But that's the reason why I started with that question, right? I didn't start with a proposition for a specific reason, because the great debate question has always been, does God exist? Now, when you say, well, I'm only atheist toward local gods, well, that's not the question, though. The question is is there any ontological God out there? If you answer no, then you hold a belief that there are no gods. And I think that if I had to give you a position, you know,
you're arguing ontology using epistemological methods.
No, because I'm asking you what your ontology is with regard to the existence of the state of affairs of the universe. If you say, I don't know if gods exist or not, you're agnostic. Gods exist, and you're just saying, I'm not assigning that to be true or false.
What if I tell you that, well, I've only studied, you know, this God, and I don't believe in any of them?
I would put you under agnostic. To me, take any nomenclature schema you want, but if you don't have the belief that there are no gods, then you don't fall under philosophical atheism.
So there's a way that this can be parsed out that makes the distinction pretty clear. So let's say that you're a theist of any kind. Does your position change just because I make up, like, say I make up a god? In some of my last few videos, I made up a hypothetical scenario where two gods fight each other in the supernatural realm, destroy the natural realm, come together, and then that creates the Big Bang, basically going, hey, look, I just granted that a god exists and your religion's still wrong.
The position that you're arguing from, though, is that the theist already holds a positive position.
I do.
Okay. But what is your position, irregardless of the made-up god that I just proposed?
Well, if it doesn't make sense to me, I mean, if it's not conceptual, then I immediately reject it.
Okay, then if that is the case for practically any other deity that can be proposed to you, then what is your position?
Some deities, and inarguably, have better defenses than others.
Okay, but whether or not they have good defenses is not the question.
Right.
The question is not how well defined the apologetics are. Mm-hmm. The question is what your position is, regardless of their defense for the position.
Right. He's asking you what your belief is, your dosastic position. Do you believe they're God?
Well, see, and that's the thing. It's all conceptual, because is this God immortal? Is this God corporeal? Is this God? Is this God a human? Is this God
I think you're going down the whole naturalistic God argument that G-Man uses. And one of the arguments that I've never had a chance to talk to G-Man about, which I hopefully probably never will, unless we go on Drunken Peasants, he wouldn't understand it. But there's something called the identity of indiscernibility, or the indiscernibles, that if two things have exactly the same properties, they're indistinguishable from each other. And I would ask him, what's the difference? If I say the sun is a God, what's the difference between that as a naturalistic god and one that isn't a god? There has to be a distinguishing property between the two, or else they're the same thing.
Exactly. But once you start applying personification to it, and you start saying that it's loving and that it's all knowing and stuff like that, then that's when you start separating star from a deity.
Qualities, right? You're almost putting it as a supernatural deity. If an inanimate object has ability to love, there's something maybe supernatural going on. But Dr. Obi, what do you think about that? Let's get his opinion. Let's get Dr. Obi real quick to kind of weigh in on this. I know he's either losing his mind or going, okay, hopefully this makes sense. But
no, I was thinking, so the reason why, part of what I think is that naturalism is the correct view. So there are none but natural entities with none but natural causal powers. That's what I say. I also say that gods, by definition, would be supernatural entities with supernatural causal powers. So if my naturalism is correct, there are no gods, right? Mm-hmm. Full stop.
By the way,
things like... Sorry?
Because I argue, and I even got flack for this, and I couldn't believe this. I argue that if you hold to ontological naturalism or philosophical naturalism, to be rational, you have to hold to philosophical atheism, to be a strong atheist. You can't say that I'm a naturalist and then I merely lack a belief in God. That, I think, is dishonest, intellectually dishonest in some ways, or at least irrational.
But then again, it also depends on your concept of God. Not everybody's concept of God is supernatural or non-corporeal.
I disagree. It doesn't depend on your concept. One entails the other. If you are a philosophical naturalist, it has to be that it entails there are no supernatural beings. Thus, there are no deities.
Yes, no supernatural beings.
Strong atheist at that point.
Was Romulus supernatural?
Yeah, there was some deification there, I think.
Yeah, there was some deification, but people worshipped him as a man.
Right, this goes into the argument that Ocean and I've had on the Emperor. But Dr. Opie, would you agree if there is no difference between a natural god and a non-natural god? Again, if there's no distinguishing things between a son that's a god and a son that's not a god, then if you're a naturalist, it makes sense to be rational, you must hold there are no supernatural gods, which is a philosophical atheist.
Mm. Okay, so I guess what we need is some account of what natural properties are that will help us to... So if we think about the sun, does the sun just have natural properties, or does it have supernatural powers of some kind? And that would be the question to ask, right? So... If we agree that there are no But I mean, I don't know how to.
What would be a supernatural property of the sun to begin with? I wouldn't even know. I think the sun would be a completely natural.
That maybe that it rises and falls on its own will.
I mean, but that only on a flat Earth model is that a problem.
Yeah.
But it doesn't rise and fall. It goes in a circle. I mean, don't you read a map? I mean,
come on. But it also changes whenever it wants when the seasons change.
Don't expose the flat Earth model. The flat Earth stuff. Try to fight it. I Dr. Obi, I got to ask you.
It'd
be a rabbit hole, but have you ever watched any of our flat Earth discussions where we just annihilate flat Earth?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you would be in for a treat.
I'd imagine that annihilating, and this is with a little bit of flat Earth discussion I've taken part in, annihilating flat Earth basically just comes to, do you have a surgeon nearby? Can they cut open your skull? Is there a brain in it? Congratulations, you've annihilated flat Earth.
I was talking to the founder of Atheist Republic today, Armin Navabi, and I was telling him how excited I was to be working with Atheist Alliance of America and they're going to help Atheist Republic promote our National Atheist Day, National Atheist Coming Out Day, which we've been approved of as an official observance day. It's going to be March 23rd, and I was sending him a voice message. And after I sent it to him, he sent me back one just dying laughing, and I couldn't figure out what was so funny. And I said, "What?" And he said, "Go back and listen to your message." Well, I was telling him about Atheist Alliance of America, and I was telling them how they were giving out Dawkins, the Dawkins Award, and that Richard Dawkins would present it on behalf of Atheist Alliance of America. And a Freudian slip, and I said, yes, I'm really, really stoked to see who they give the Darwin Award to this year.
I wasn't aware that anybody.
I have to sue now for not having an official agnostic day. Okay, great. So.
I wasn't aware that anybody other than Kent Hovind had gotten the Darwin Award for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. There's a guy who tried to make toast in the bathtub. Yeah.
He's the only official living person that's ever received the Darwin Award. Well, let's move on to because I know we've got a limited amount of time. So, but just to sum that up, it's not too crazy to say that if you're a philosophical naturalist, you're a strong atheist, right? I think it does entail the other one.
But. So in my book on naturalism and religion that I published earlier this year, that's what I say, given the way that I've defined all the terms in the book. It's just it's just a straight entailment from naturalism to atheism.
Yeah, but that again, makes perfect sense to me.
You know, That depends on a certain amount of stipulation, but it shouldn't seem completely crazy.
That's that way I would put it as well. So let's dive into the part where everybody's really wanting to know, the people that are tuning in right now. A lot of them know that my argument that I started to have a discussion with Dr. Malik, who wrote a paper called Defining Atheism and the Burden of Proof. And he's a very nice guy. Matter of fact, I'm just thrilled that we've had such great communication over the last month or so. Unfortunately, he lives in the United Arab Emirates, and they don't have Skype, but they don't allow face-to-face kind of things for some strange reason. And so he's been leaving me a phone call to call, and it's completely time zone problem, and so I haven't had a chance to actually communicate with him verbally, and I know he wants to. He really is thrilled by having a conversation with me, and we've been having awesome emails. But Dr. Opie had actually read that paper, and he's familiar with my argument. And so this argument that has been making many waves throughout the atheist communities, I know that Atheist Republic's familiar with it, Mock Atheist Sirs is well familiar with it, Brian's familiar with it. And the argument is just basically something that I don't even think is that contentious when looking into epistemology. It's basically saying that anybody who has a belief, and if that belief is even still a position, or anybody who has a position, has a burden of proof. And I mean that interchangeably with a burden of justification. Now, I will capitulate that in legalese, burden of proof means a little bit different. It's more evidential. It has to do with burden of production and burden of persuasion. But in epistemology, Ozzy Ramdes II on my Facebook page just recently said he uses these terms interchangeably as well. So I think that I'm not out in left field by doing that. But my argument is that even if you don't believe in a God, you still have to justify why you reject somebody's claim. You still have to explain to them why you don't believe them, to have a dialectic. And that's all my argument really is saying, is that because all beliefs to be rational need to be justified, excluding properly basic beliefs for now, that if you just are in a conversation and you don't believe somebody, there is a burden of some kind, a trivial one, that I refer to as a second order justification, because it's not on the proposition, to justify why you don't believe the person. So, Dr. Arby, can you kind of give me some of your feedback on that? And like I said, I know that you've read Dr. Malik's work, and I think we agree and disagree on the same points with his paper. So,
actually don't like the use of the expression burden of proof in connection with philosophy because of its legal associations. And there's a famous paper by David Lewis, Evil for Freedom's Sake, which he ends. So I just want to read this. So he's reached the point of saying that there's a certain thing that's a bit inconclusive. And he says, some will want to play on by debating which side bears the burden of proof. Myself, I think this pastime is as useless as it is undignified. And in the spoken version of the paper, he then ad-libbed, are we lawyers? Right. So it was clear that his view was that talking about burden of proof, about who's responsible for the next move in the debate or who has to defend themselves or whatever, is pointless and undignified, as he says. And this is not a substantive point, really. It's just a way of kind of moving into saying that I think that I just agree with you about the point that when it comes to our believing, everybody's responsible for their beliefs. If you're a sort of responsible believer, then you will have believed well. And if you're prepared to enter into a discussion with someone and it turns out that you disagree on a point, then you should be prepared, if you want to continue on in the discussion, to say why it is that you believe as you do, to try to work out what's the point of difference between you and the person that you're discussing with. And there are no special burdens that go to one side or the other just because of the particular beliefs that they have.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. And I don't mean to make it to be a special condition, right? I think these things are normative. And the people that have listened to my argument, I think a lot of them would be like, oh, well, if you just change that to burden justification, then they're fine with that, right? I don't have too many people, I think, have complained too much. There's some outliers that have said, you know, look, a person who doesn't believe has no justification, no burden whatsoever. Now, I disagree with that very strongly. And the reason being is, if I said to Lawrence, hey, Lawrence, reality exists, and you say you don't believe me, I think you need to be justified why you don't think reality exists, right? To be rational, because I think to be a rational person, you have to either, me personally, as a more classical type foundationalist, I just assume that the universe exists. I take it as an axiom. I'm okay with that. But would you agree that, be rational, you have to have some kind of foundation or coherentism or something to say that reality is real? And if you don't believe reality is real, that to me implies you're irrational. So I would expect there to be a justification for that. So why is it any different than atheism? If an atheist says, I don't believe the theist, which again, I don't like that whole, I don't believe their claim, but arguendo, if somebody says, I don't believe the theist, or look at, I don't believe that there are gods, why is it any different? To be rational, should you not have to justify that for the same reasons as why you justify you don't believe reality is real, if that was the case?
I mean, would this apply to any claim?
Anything. These are all, this is what I think that, yeah. I have to emphasize enough. But this is not just toward atheism. My argument is toward any proposition, toward any dialectic.
But the only problem is that the only way that you're going to convince anybody outside of manipulating somebody's naivety, you would have to present them with some sort of evidence that would meet their standards or their standards of belief. And it's really hard for a theist to do that because they are operating from unsubstantiated claims.
But we're talking about yourself. We're talking about, well, these are self-assessments.
Yeah. Exactly. But
it's critical. It's autobiographical in a way, right? Look, if I'm asking you, Jim, is the earth flat? Is the earth round? Is the earth round? And you say, I don't know. I'm going to take you to be an irrational person unless you can justify why you don't have a belief in that. Now, there's sometimes you don't have to have a justification. Dr. Opie in his Atheism and Agnosticism, I love this. You use the term innocence to describe people that have never been exposed to a proposition.
Which, right? Is justification. Not atheists.
Yeah, that is an intrinsic justification that doesn't need any actual justification because they've never been exposed to the proposition. And I think that was brilliant to put it that way. Somebody else does as well, Dr. Friedman, I think, from her paper, Suspending Judgment. But Dr. Opie, real quick, do you want to expand upon that? Why a person who is innocent, who has never been exposed to the proposition, is already self-justified?
So I guess depends what you mean by justified. Like, if you've got a belief, you might be able to tender some justification for having the belief. If you're innocent, you don't know about the proposition. So it's a bit odd to talk about justification in that sense, because
they don't have, there is none.
You're not in a position to be able to do that. But you can certainly say something like, let's suppose you've got the right conditions, that they're not culpable, right? They've got a perfectly good excuse why they're innocent, right?
Now, like, you don't put innocence in either,
or whatever the story might be.
The only problem is that once you start accepting new information, you are no longer innocent because you now have knowledge of the opposite claim.
Well, this is somebody like, for example, years ago, there's people that put out this narrative that if you're a baby, you're an atheist, you're born atheist, and even gone so far to say inanimate objects are atheists, right? There are people out there that have videos that do argue, and logically in their schema, it does follow, unfortunately, because of set theory, that rocks, atoms, quarks, stars are all atheists. Now, I think
that's because they have this idea that everything that lacks a belief must be an atheist.
Right. It follows from a universal set. So that if you're talking about sets and complementary sets, but putting aside the problem logic with is not flawed, in their schema, I want to ask Dr. Opie why I got him here, because we're quickly running out of time. I don't want to keep him too long. Do you think it makes sense to say babies are atheist or inanimate objects like rocks are atheist?
There's going to be a problem with this because the person lacks the belief that there are no gods and also lacks the belief that there are gods and also lacks, I mean, you know, anyway, but put that to one side. I can't remember now whether it's in this book, the Atheism and Agnosticism book, or if it's in the Atheism, the Basics book, that it was just a mistake for Holbach to say that babies are atheists, because he did say that, right? It's sort of like, so what did I say there? It's as if, you know, babies lack political beliefs, but that doesn't make them little anarchists, right? It's parents might say.
That's a good way to put it. Right.
I actually think that once for one, inanimate objects cannot suspend their judgment of a belief without being conscious. So we can go ahead and just eliminate that right now. But
that eliminates rocks.
I will say that I think rocks can be agnostic, but that's another story. As far as babies go, as soon as a baby is presented with information and starts rationalizing that information and starts actually plugging it into algorithms mentally and really appealing to their belief system, until they accept that belief, they're not anything.
Yeah, well, again, I think these positions are things that people come to. I think that there have to have some kind of cognitive or executive decision making.
Yeah.
I think it's nonsensical to say a rock is an atheist. I think it's nonsensical to say a baby's an atheist. I vehemently just think that's a horrible way of approaching it.
Yeah.
Now, again, I will admit that it's consistent in their schema.
In order to be an atheist, you have to be aware of a theism.
Well, no. Well, first of all, we got Dr. Opie here. Stanford Encyclopedia makes it very clear. It is an etymological fallacy. They don't use that terminology, but to say that atheism means without theism. Matter of fact, Cambridge doesn't even put it as without. It makes it very clear that not means negation, as in the negation of the proposition. So the proposition is God exists. The negation is God does not exist. So that's where the negation goes. It's not it's not without gods. Now, it may have been a very much long time ago, because it meant without the Roman gods, right? The Christians were without the Roman gods, so they were considered to be atheos, but
heathens.
They're the damn heathens.
So one thing to note here, just a kind of interesting historical note, is that the word atheism came into English about 80 years before the word theism.
I try to tell people
that atheism was actually a term in use for about 80 years in English before the word theism. Now, it's true that atheism derived from atheos, it goes back to the Greek, but it's still an interesting historical fact.
Right.
I've told people that, they think I'm crazy. But would you agree that A is meant, is ought, and I use the word ought as normative here, obviously, that if, again, generally speaking, A and atheist means not. It doesn't mean without. It means the negation of theism or the beliefs that there are no gods.
Right. But even in using that entomology, you would still have to have knowledge of that god before you can.
You keep changing the propositional attitude, and I see that, and I don't know why. We're talking about fantastic belief systems.
But what I'm saying is how can you claim that something doesn't exist that you don't even have knowledge of its claim in the first
aliens,
place?
I can say aliens exist. I have no knowledge either way. I can make a probabilistic argument.
But
they do exist.
But you have a knowledge of the. But you have a knowledge of the aliens, right?
I have no knowledge of aliens, one way or another.
Sure, you do. You know that aliens are not from Earth; that they are visitors.
No,
space.
I have knowledge of the concept of aliens.
Exactly.
That we would know about aliens, but I have no knowledge existentially whether aliens exist or not. It's a huge difference. And I use knowledge propositionally. I don't use it as explicit knowledge, as in something that.
Right. But if somebody did not know that that anybody claimed any supernatural deity existed, how can they very well be an atheist? Because they would have to first reject the claim that they know nothing of.
Well, again, the atheists are the people that reject. But I would put it this way.
That's what I'm saying.
You could mirror these things very easily. If we happen to define or happen to frame atheism with respect to theism, the theism is the proposition that at least one God exists, therefore the negation of that or the rejection such that it is the belief that gods don't exist. We could frame that the other way. We could make it just as easy to say, hey, you know what? The proposition is gods do not exist. And if you believe that, you're an atheist. But if you don't believe that, now all of a sudden you're a theist. And that makes no sense to me, although that's how it would mirror. Think about this very carefully, Jim. If I have the position, and we'll get Dr. Opie to weigh in on this, hopefully, because this has been something of contention. But if I say that there are no gods, if I have the proposition that at least one God does not exist,
right.
If I believe that, I'm a theist. And now what the weak atheist or the implicit atheist or the colloquial atheist does, it says, well, if you don't believe that's true, you lack a belief in that, or you don't have that belief, you are now considered, it's assumed to be an atheist because you have that economy of atheism and theism that they've made. Same thing is reversed with the mirror. If I have the proposition that no gods exist, and you adhere to that, you think that's true, you're an atheist. But by the same reasoning, again, philosophy is all about reasoning. By the same reasoning, if you don't adhere to that, you would be assumed under theism, whether you have a God belief or not.
I disagree though in the way that I'm putting it with somebody without prior knowledge. Now, if in your case, if you were to suspend a belief that you already have, then yes, you would be a theist. If you suspended your disbelief and if you said I no longer believe that gods don't exist, then yes, you would become a theist. But if you had an absence of that belief in the first place, or an absence
All people that suspend judgment don't believe in God. There is an absence there.
No, I'm talking about an absence of the knowledge of the deity, or the God concept, or a God, gods, the word God, the definition of God.
All right, let me get Dr. Opie's a thing on here. And by the way, do you agree that he keeps switching between?
I'll agree with you, but okay. I think there's a difference between absence of belief and suspension of belief.
Well, there is, but all people that suspend judge, all agnostics don't have a belief. All atheists don't have a belief. All apatheists don't have a belief.
But not all non-believers have to suspend their belief. Some are just absent of that belief.
Right. I fully agree with you on that. That's why they're different positions.
So part of the issue here is what to say about potential believers who lack the relevant concepts, so they can't form the thought, right? That's the point that you're making. So babies may be lack the concept of God, and so can't have any attitude to any proposition about gods, for example, that there are gods or there aren't. But as they grow, perhaps eventually they'll acquire the concept. Once they've acquired it, then either they believe that there are gods, or they believe that there are no gods, or they suspend judgment. They mm-hmm. kind of end up in one of the other states. But at the other end of life, you can lose concepts as dementia sets in. You can go back to not being atheist, agnostic, or theist, but being innocent because you no longer have the capacity to frame the thought again. And so, and then, you know, there are other cases like chimpanzees are kind of interesting. They have various concepts, not sure whether they can frame the God concept though. So probably they're just innocents as well, but that's a kind of empirical question, you know.
But does my mirroring work? By the way, I got that mirroring from actually, if you go to Use of Reason from Dr. Malpass, he uses a very similar approach.
Sure. I mean, that argument is one that I've kind of adverted to a couple of times while we've been talking as well. I mean, that's part of the point about the symmetry of the situation here. There are two propositions. Those two propositions, there are no gods, there's at least one god, are then used to define a bunch of attitudes. And it better not be that you treat theism and atheism asymmetrically.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is something very weird happening.
Do you consider atheism and theism from your schema as contraries? If one's true, the other one has to be false.
Yeah.
Okay. And also somebody had actually said in the live chat, by the way, I am paying attention to the live chat. Thank you all for watching. They say, well, if an agnostic can believe in God. And now in this scheme that we're talking about, in the literature that I read, yes, you can use agnostic as an epistemic modifier, but that's not how it's normally done. And if you're an agnostic, you cannot be theist or atheist. Those are different positions altogether. They are mutually exclusive. Would you agree, Dr. Opie?
So, yes, let me say one other thing too. An agnostic can be quite sure about certain gods that they do not exist.
Absolutely. Right? If a god is contingent upon the earth being 7,000 years old, that god does not exist. Straight up, I am strong atheist toward that god, if that's using Jim's schema there, which I think is weird. But I will flat out say those gods do not exist. I believe that type of god does not exist if it's contingent upon the earth being 7,000 years old. The reason being, the earth isn't 7,000 years old.
So what you're saying is you're a naturalist, Steve.
No, I don't. Here's the funniest thing. I don't hold ontological naturalism.
I'm just fucking with you.
Although the people that hold to ontological naturalism, I get it, right? I do understand why they do that. Sure. What bugs me is when you say have somebody says they're an ontological naturalist, but they won't say that there are no gods. I find that to be inconsistent.
Well, that's only if you hold the definition of a god to be supernatural or existing outside of natural law.
Look, I think it's a ridiculous argument to say whether gods are natural.
I think it is too, Steve. I mean, fuck, I do too. But the thing is that it's an argument.
Well,
there are people who attribute gods to natural things.
Absolutely.
Well, there are natural. The term "natural gods" to me originally was somebody, for example, a god.
I don't think that's what's being discussed when someone says "natural gods."
Right. You've read the incarnations and immortality, and you're a polytheist, so you're well familiar with certain gods having controlling or dominion over something that is natural. That's when I hear naturalistic gods. That's what I've always thought of until I met G-Man, and then my whole life changed. And I got.
And then we got into our Roman Empire.
Which I mentioned earlier in this stream, by the way.
I think that the last time we had this conversation, I wound up agreeing with you.
Well, yeah, you know what? You and I could spend hours and hours and hours talking about this. We do like to sway people. We do have a burden of persuasion because we are trying to change. We're trying to influence people. And Dr. Opie, I want to make sure that we're okay on time with you, and we're ready to jet. Just please let me know. We're ending this anytime, and it might have an after show to talk about certain things. But we talk about these discussions for many, many years. I've known Ocean for quite some time, and some of my newer friends like Jim, I've only known for about 2 months, but he's fast becoming one of my favorite people. You're awesome, man. You really are. And I mean that.
Knowing either Steve or Ocean for years seems like that would be terribly hard.
Who the hell are you, Sharers? And how'd you get in here? No, I love everybody here. Everybody's great people. But what I see is this narrative putting out by the bigger channels. I mean, yes, the Non-Sequitur Show is substantial nowadays. It's decent size. We have a few thousand people watching sometimes. But, compared to the Atheist Experience and those channels, which I have a lot of respect for, I do watch them. I think Matt Dillahunty is brilliant in what he does. We don't agree on a lot of things. And by the way, there is talk that him and I might be having a discussion. He's not against me, by the way, I found out. He actually doesn't think I'm an idiot, which is good. High praise from Matt. Right? Well, he's not an idiot, at least. Okay. But,
Steve, don't worry. I think you're an idiot.
But Dr. Opie, do you see that my whole stance is trying to put a different positions out there that might brussel against the narrative that the main mainstream YouTube atheists have been indoctrinated, and I use that word specifically, indoctrinated, to believe, because they've never been exposed to actually reading papers. And I had put it out before that the people that are generally saying that I'm wrong are the people that have never read a peer-reviewed paper. They've never opened a book on the topic. They've never gone to college for epistemology. And again, I'm a pure layperson when it comes to this topic. My background was in nuclear reactor technologies. But I spent 4 or 5 years with under the tutelage of people like Dr. Malpass and Ozzy and brilliant people that I have the utmost respect for, who sent me reading material, including, you know, your writings. I don't even know how to phrase this, but can you at least see my position as somebody who wants to be correct, wants to know truths, that holds to an agnostic position, fighting against this massive stream of people that are just not really, you know, bothering to look into my arguments and just saying by fiat that I'm wrong?
So I'm not sure how to respond to that exactly.
Bleep blind. It's cool.
It seems to me that...
Hang on, Jim.
Agnosticism is a perfectly respectable position, right? And if you're thinking about this back when I used to call myself an agnostic, it's going to be annoying to be told that you're classifying yourself wrongly, right? Mm-hmm. So of course,
thank you. And by the way, I am not against people that hold a strong atheism. I get it. I totally understand it. Matter of fact, if we actually talked about other things relating to like the woo-woo and quantum woo-woo and spiritualism nonsense and fortune telling and homeopathy and all that crap, we are all on the same page, right? The only difference is that I don't feel justified at this time in life to say I hold that belief. I'm a doxastic and voluntarist, so I can't just will myself to believe something. And I don't hold to the belief that there are no gods. So I don't describe myself to the label of atheist. Now, that may change from now, right? And I think atheists shoot themselves in the foot by not allowing that middle ground, by saying it doesn't exist, which I think is completely wrong. Because as you, Dr. Opie, it seems like you went from different positions and you were agnostic and you have that position to go to, and then you've over time reached a more strong atheist position, right?
So partly it was just, I think, that my understanding of the labels changed, but there has, in certain respects, it's also true that my beliefs have, I don't know, they've clarified or hardened or something like that. So now these days I'm definitely a pretty hardcore naturalist.
Mm-hmm. But the agnostic position is not some mediocre position. It has its own burden. No. It has its own reasons. There is a middle ground between belief and belief that it's not, you know, believing that there are gods or believing that there are no gods. So when people just try to assume it under atheism, do you have any words for them? Because, again, I've been fighting this battle for a long time. Oz has been fighting this battle with me. Dr. Malpass is, he agrees and disagrees because he's Alex as well as most people. Alex doesn't really like take positions. He's so brilliant that he's just, here's it is, you decide kind of thing.
So I think for lots of professional philosophers, they're agnostic about lots and lots and lots of things. And so they're bound to think that agnosticism is a respectable position. If you think about all the philosophical questions, how hard they are, how hard it is to get your head around them and to take a position on them, it's inevitable that most professional philosophers are agnostic about lots of things. So you should get lots of sympathy from all of them.
And this is why I put this on my Facebook. I know I got some criticism for it, but I did put on my Facebook, and this was not being smug. What it was I had put out that many philosophers and people with PhDs, educated people, none of them, not one of them so far that I can think of, has excoriated me or chastised me for my positions or said that I'm wrong. Matter of fact, even the logic I used, a friend of mine works at Cal State Long Beach. He's the head of the entire mathematical logic department, Dr. Bill Ziemer. I've known his wife since high school. He loves what I write, and he thinks it's fine. Now, again, I may not have the formal training, but he goes by the concepts. And my thing that I put on my Facebook was the people that are telling me I'm wrong. I did put like a gardeners and rap DJs and people that real life scenarios of people that have told me I'm wrong. And it wasn't a dismissing their occupation. I was in retail for 20 years for Pete's sake, right? Nothing against person's occupation. My point was all those people had never read a philosophical paper. Not one of them have opened a book on the topic. Not one of them went to Google Scholar. Not one of them went to Google Books. And that to me is no different than saying I'm wrong about the shape of the earth, or I'm wrong about the Big Bang, or I'm wrong about evolution. Why is it any different if I would have changed this discussion to evolution and say, look, these six people, you know, they'd never open a book on evolution. You know, they're DJs and whatever, but they're telling me I'm wrong, that creationism is true. Yet all these biologists that I know with PhDs say that I'm right on it. Why is it any different if I use the same analogy in this case, talking about philosophy?
It's not.
They think it is. A lot of people get upset by my post on that.
It's appeal to authority, Steve.
But it's a legit. Well,
No. It's an appeal to knowledge, is what it is. I mean,
probably a bad way of putting it too.
It's a legit appeal to authority. Expansively, but they think that I was saying that because these people agree with me that I'm right. That would be fallacious, right? If I say Dr. Opie, who I have the utmost respect for, if I say I'm right because he says I'm right, that's a fallacy, right? But if I say, hey, he's agreeing with me, meaning that my arguments aren't completely foobar, right? It's not fucked beyond recognition. Then I think I'm good standing. I'm on solid ground, and that's what I'm coming from. Because people will take me and they're just by fiat say I'm wrong because all they've listened to is things like the Atheist Experience, and they've never heard this other side of the stuff.
Dr. Oppie, I have a question. First of all, I just want to say that you know, I'm in my early 30s. I am a D convert. I am an expat of Christianity, so to speak. I'm looking for someone, and I have their number and their name, Lawrence. So a lot of people my age who deconvert, who weren't raised in atheism, a lot of people's, I guess can say were the catalyst were one of the greats, whether it be Christopher Hitchens or Richard Dawkins or somebody like that, that actually helped foster them into their acceptance of their disbelief. So Dawkins has his spectrum scale, the spectrum of theistic probability on a scale of 1 to 7, in which he proposes that there is no agnosticism, that it is just a blurred line between ex facto atheism and ex facto theism. Well, what would you say to that, and what is your personal opinion on the validity of the spectrum?
So it's a bit odd.
It's organizing, yeah.
So it's a bit odd to have a scale from 1 to 7. I think because there's kind of one proposition here, and if you think of belief as a sort of all or nothing thing, either you've got it or you don't, and then there's this possibility of suspension in between. You'd think the scale might have 3 spots on it. If you're going to go the way that lots of philosophers do and think in terms of credences, probabilities, then you're going to have a continuum all the way from 100% to 0%.
Right.
So I do think that the scale's a little bit odd, but that's just a kind of quibbling with the details, right? There's clearly, once we move away from they're kind of all or nothing, there's just 3 positions, it's actually more nuanced than that. There's going to be a kind of graded scale of some sort. And
sure.
I would put myself on Dawkins' scale at a 7, not at a 6, but anyway.
Sure. Well, yeah, and I've always said that, you know, of course, you know, certainty is not certain, but I've always said that 1 and 7 are as close to 100% certainty as you can humanly possibly get, and have a very 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 strong conviction. One could say an unbreakable conviction. And I've always said that I am that rationally I'm a 6, but emotionally I'm a 7. Because
certainty, though, it raises the back of my hair on the neck, my neck kind of thing. By the way, thank you for the super chat, Dr. Zayas. And by the way, yes, I believe that if you jump off the Empire State Building, you will die, because the super chat said, let me read it real quick. Jumping off the Empire State Building, do you believe it will kill you or not kill you, or agnostic on the proposition, no parachute or other man-made trickery? And yeah, there's somebody, I guess, that did survive, but that doesn't mean that it just means my belief was wrong. That is not, I didn't say it's impossible, right? Beliefs can be wrong. And I actually wrote a blog, and I don't think Dr. Opie read it, but it was on principle of attribution and retraction, how beliefs can be wrong, but knowledge can't be. But when you talk about certainty, that opens up a whole different reality of what we're talking about when we're talking about Descartes certainty or things like Cartesian certainty or brain in a vat and arguments against that, like Putnam's arguments using linguistics and things like epistemic closure. These are fascinating things, which I am halfway through a blog piece on it. But I think that by talking about certainty, you're automatically going in down a path that doesn't need to be going down. Because to be an atheist, even in the philosophical sense, requires no certainty, right? It requires conviction, obviously, and it requires the proposition to be true.
It requires some degree of certainty, but not absolute certainty.
Well, but what is some... I mean, you're just making a probabilistic argument, which I think all things are probabilistic in that way. Yeah. Would you agree, Dr. Opie, that an atheist, if they just, if probabilistically speaking, they add up all these different arguments. They say, look, because of the problem of evil, logical and evidential and divine hiddenness and all these different reasons, I think the case is, it is more likely ontologically that there are no gods. Therefore, I do believe that there are no gods. That's a fine justification for me, for somebody to do that, is it not?
Right. So in one way of thinking about this graded scale, the agnostic would sit at 50%, right?
That's impossible.
Right. and then anything between 50 and 100 would be, we'll do it in terms of there being no gods. That would be atheism, all the way from certainty to just slightly more likely than not. All of those would count as atheists.
Yeah, Dr. Malbass has a little preamble. He'll go, a little bit on the side. So it's 50, a little bit higher, a little bit lower. I think there's a little bit of a range there. I'm not a black and white person. I'm a big fan of fuzzy logic for that reason.
Yeah. See, I'm of the position that if you're 50%, you're a baby. You have no knowledge one way or the other. If you're 51, you're a theist. And if you're 49.
I really do got to ask. These are all belief things.
Just so you know,
because knowledge plays into your belief.
What, Lawrence?
Oh, just so you know, Jim was inadvertently calling you a baby.
Oh, I guess.
No, I was not.
I heard it too.
I called him a rock earlier, and he didn't even catch it.
there are some days I wake up.
It's not a Muslim country.
There are some days I wake up and I might slide a little bit more toward an atheistic viewpoint, and some days I might wake up and be more of a theistic. It all depends. I mean, people know we're going to have a hangout on DMT coming up here, and I'm doing a lot of research on that. Let me finish. I've had weird experiences, right? And granted, I do think they're internalized. I think that a neural theological constructivist approach is probably the way to go, rather than some kind of literal. Or a reductionist approach, or constructivist, or actually both of them would hold that these entities don't exist. But we've had experiences. Now, I'm not so willing to go so far that I'm a philosophical naturalist, but I can understand why people will be, right? But again, I'm not at that position. That's why I do hold agnosticism. I think it's completely rational to do so. And when I hear people that are out there saying, well, that means you have to be 50% one way or another. No, I don't. There are times where I go back and forth and I vacillate. Dr. Opie, again, I want my beliefs to be rational. Has everything you've said or I've said so far in this hangout, does it appear to be rational, or am I being completely irrational or even partially irrational? Be blunt.
But let's go back and think a bit about what rationality requires. Some people set very high standards for being rational, and other people have quite permissive standards. My standards are about as permissive as they can be, so almost everything gets to count as rational.
Talking like a true philosopher.
by my lights. I mean, there are things you can't do. Like, I mean, some philosophers will think that you can believe absurd things and still be rational. I don't think.
Yeah, I don't fall for that.
There's not much by way of limits here. So long as, right? I mean, there's a kind of ordinary notion of rationality on which most people.
Well, how about this?
And that's the relevant standard that I want to appeal to.
No, I agree with you, and I thank you for that. But how about consistency, or even better, am I consistent with the modern understanding of most of these readings of papers? And again, I'm not talking about outliers. I'm not talking about opinion pieces.
Yeah, sure.
But generally, am I being consistent in how these are used?
So I think that the way that you're thinking about the kind of topics that we've talked about today is consistent with what you find in things like the Stanford Encyclopedia, standard textbooks of philosophy of religion, and so on.
That's my biggest concern, because I'm not formally trained in any of this. Again, I've never taken a philosophy course other than critical thinking in contemporary rhetoric, where I learned fallacies. So the one thing I did take in college was fallacies. So I did have a formal education on that. But other than that, I took no philosophy courses, and I regret that to this day, because I used to be that person, Dr. Opie, that hated philosophy. I was one of those people that said, oh, philosophy is useless. It's a bunch of people sitting around in stuffed chairs, drinking cognac and smoking cigars. I had no idea how much value philosophy had until I had a friend of mine who had a PhD in philosophy who had run circles around my ass, and I got tired of it. And getting involved in these conversations, I realized maybe I should learn this. And I'm so grateful that I have, because I will tell everybody, the whole thing about philosophy is about reasoning and is about logic and it is about trying to be rational and consistent. And it just is amazing some of the things you can think about that you cannot do from a scientific aspect. You have to bring it to the realm of metaphysics philosophy.
You talk about consistency and rationality and reason. But what other belief, philosophical or not, do you hold with the exception of the deity or not hold or is it, or are agnostic about, let's take naturalism, for instance. Is there anything else besides the possible existence of a deity that you don't apply your naturalist side to, or naturalist? Well, again,
I only hold to mythological naturalism. And by the way, Dr. Grabby, OP, okay. how much longer do you have?
I should probably get going fairly soon.
I kind of assume so. So let me just wrap this up with this question.
Sure thing. We can do this in the after show.
Well, I want to get in this video because you asked me in this video. So real quick, in science, you have to assume that there are natural explanations to natural phenomenon. And science starts off with the methodology that there are no supernatural causations. And I think you have to hold to that. I'm perfectly fine with that. And I don't know of any supernatural causations for anything. And even if there was, would that mean ontologically that becomes natural? And again, I take a deity to me, something that can prescriptively change the laws of the universe. Now, again, that's just stipulative just for me. But anyways, Dr. Opie, very much thank you so much for joining us in this. I'm glad that I have you on Twitter now. Hopefully that you can read some of my tweets and chime in. I mean, I am going to have Sisyphus Redeemed on to have a very similar thing about this. Maybe you can listen in and get your feedback. But overall, is there anything you want to tell the people about far as what we've talked about, your book, Atheism and Agnosticism, which, again, was a very great read. I'm still sussing out some of the agnostic stuff that you talked about, but I think I'm in agreement with you. But we'll let you kind of take us out, and then I might have an after show on this.
Nothing really in particular to add, but if you did like atheism and agnosticism, you should have a look at Atheism, the Basics. I enjoyed writing that book.
Yeah, in fact, somebody just asked me that question. They said, what evidence moved you to accept atheism? And I said, there's a book on it. And that book is the one that you have some strong reasons to support strong atheism, or reasons why people can have an atheist argument and be justified for it. Because I think a lot of people are concerned, I don't want to take a belief position or one that they, quote, have a burden of proof, because everybody agrees positive has a burden of proof. I think, again, anybody in a conversation does, but they don't want to take that upon them because they don't have the skills yet or the knowledge in order to justify it because they don't know the arguments. Would you say that your book would give them the ability to do that, to move them from this lack of belief to an actual belief position?
What is the name of this book?
Atheism, the Basics. That's what it's called. Probably not. No book's got magic powers, but it certainly will help.
And that's all it is, too. I mean, these are all persuasive arguments. But anyways, I'm going to end this.